I don't even know if I was really ready to start this. I kind of wanted to just sit there and listen to that Horseman theme song a little bit more. But we're here. What the hell? Bad News Ramen right in front of me. Better have my donuts over here. And kind of been plugging along here at 51 now. We hit the big 5-0 last week. So 51, if I'm not mistaken, I think that would be the Ken Norton edition. Ken Norton Jr.
Are you punching the... You punching the ring
punching
post?
Punching the goalpost.
Yeah.
Punching that goalpost after the pick six. But yeah, I mean, coming off another Raw headed towards Survivor Series.
Who was that San Diego dude that tried doing that? Remember, he just looked like a big time, like, Nancy, like, trying to hit that. It was like, it was against San Diego, remember? And, like, he
in the Super Bowl?
Was it the Super Bowl?
Well, that's the time I remember us whipping him up, but I don't think...
I don't think it was. It was like, he was like some, like, wide receiver, like some white guy, right, third wide receiver, and he catches a pass, and, like, he goes up to the ring post, and he just starts flailing on it. Like, there weren't even punches, man. They're just, like, slaps, you know, like swinging open-hand hooks or something like that.
Sister boy should have stuck around. I think I actually remember who you're talking about when you say white San Diego receiver. I can't think of the guy's name.
Start with an R or something like that. It wasn't Tim Rattay, but it's something like a Tim. Some call him Tim.
Tim Dwight?
Tim Dwight, yeah, yeah.
I think that was it, yeah.
And he was all yelling the camera, yeah, yeah. Yes,
the precursor to your boy, your former Patriot.
Compatriot, yeah. There was a couple of them. Brandon Stokely was like the next one, and then
Wes Weckler?
Yeah, Wes Weckler, yeah.
Wes Weckler?
Wes Weckler. Gronk being Gronk.
You mean Gonk?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's definitely not as good as Vince Wilcock, though. Vince Wilcock's my boy.
You always got to will the cock, dude.
You got to.
Get up, man. Come on. Come on, man. Get up. We talked about this. So, instead of like just going with like a straight Raw play by play, I mean, because it's leading up to Survivor Series, so
well, there's something I did want to say first.
Did you just touch?
I did. I'm going to interrupt you, but then I'm going to segue.
What did I say about touching? No touching, dude.
He said it had to be lower, but so one thing I wanted.
Well, that's the problem with the Wilcock.
Wilcock.
Yeah.
So we talk about the stuff here and there. What's happening? And then every once in a while when we're talking about things we liked or something, we talk about little things. And there's a little thing that I noticed on SmackDown that I wanted to bring up.
Vince Wilcock, he wasn't there, was he?
No, he's not a little thing either.
you know, first experience, right?
He's a big guy, Judge.
Please, Vince. Please listen to the Niners. I'll do anything for you.
that never happens. Let's see. So it kind of took me about 15 minutes to figure out what it was. Put the whole pieces together.
Getting smarter, huh?
Yeah.
Getting smarter in your old age. Instead of like the 45 minutes, it only took you 15 minutes this time, huh?
Yes.
You're like, wait a minute. You're sitting there after a few, you're like, wait a minute.
I was. It was early enough in the show, I was only like 2 beers in at the time.
Wait a goddamn minute. Something just came to me.
So when CM Punk had his promo, right? And he went and he's calling out the Wyatts. And, you know, they weren't coming down to the ring. And then he said, you guys come on. He's like, it's okay, because I'll be here all night long. And like, woo! I was waiting for the woo, right? So,
yeah.
But there was no woo. But at first, I just like, oh, that's a good homage. You know, like, and I know that's like, that's not one of his, I mean, it's one of his signature phrases, but it's kind of one of his lesser used ones.
Yeah.
So not everybody knows.
It was actually, you'll be mine all night long.
Right.
Yeah. You'll be mine.
Right. But then, like, the thing that
night
long. Woo! Daddy.
But then, no, it's going to get hot tonight, yeah. Daddy. Okay, you got to get it right, dude. Come on.
I just mix them all, man. All right. So, but the thing I like, and when he first said it, I was thinking Flair. But the reason why it took me about 15 minutes, I think, is because I usually fast forward the open, but I had kind of forgotten that they were in
Charlotte.
North Carolina,
yeah.
And so like it kind of tied it in, like, and that like it's a very little thing.
I didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah, see, that's, yeah. And that's
very good.
It was a very little thing, but it's one of those things that when you pick up, see, it only took me 15 minutes. It took you like a week and a half over here.
Well, I mean, hey.
But I just like they tied it all in. It's like, oh yeah, you know that plays big in North Kakalaki. But I thought it was a good little spot, and it brought a smile.
You got the one on Raw though, right, with the Dolph Ziggler match when you started doing all those elbows to
who? Yeah, he was to Axel.
Yeah, well, you heard what JBL said to the King, right? Right when he started, he's like, watch it, King. Because you know the whole thing about when the King got his heart attack. They said, King, like, said it was probably, it wasn't so much as because his cholesterol was fine and everything. It was more because of Dolph Ziggler's elbows. You know, his repeated elbows. And then at the last one, he's like, here comes the heartbreaker. You know, like, so he didn't catch that. Nah. It's kind of funny, I mean, because we talk about JBL a lot. And, I mean, JBL's mic work is just epic. I mean, it's good in there. Like, whenever the Los Matadors comes out with his Ole, but even that, like, the what's up, I mean, that's just like...
Yeah,
that's
he was
like
killing me with the what's up.
That's like the perfect. That's like... He had both of them. You know, he got the and he Uso. Got both all at the same time. Yeah, and Uso one too.
Oh,
but it's kind of funny, you know. Kind of as much hate as you have for Jerry Lawler, and then you kind of have Cole kind of playing with that too. I mean, this guy like really like pushes the envelope. I think a lot of times where you're kind of like sitting there going like, have they talked about this before, or? Is this kind of just off the cuff? And to me, it kind of seems like it's off the cuff because the King doesn't respond to that stuff. I just think the King, he can't respond anymore. If he doesn't have JR feeding him lines of what to say on the mic,
right?
You know, he just kind of falls flat, which is kind of, to me, I mean, the King, back when he actually meant something, could actually, like, you know, he was the one that was kind of doing all the barbs and doing, like, little digs here and there with wrestlers and everything like that, and now he's not even doing that. So it's just a really kind of weak announced team, and then, you know, but at least JBL brings in an element to that.
Yeah, I mean, like, the King was at his best when he was a heel announcer, playing off of JR, and that was when he was at his best. But now that they've turned him as a space announcer, basically all he's got is these, like, stupid, really bad jokes that...
And there's no puppies anymore. Puppies!
Yeah, he doesn't...
Can't even do that anymore.
He can't do the puppies. And that was one of his best things going. So, yeah, no, he's been really neutered and rendered ineffectual. I think Cole's better off as a...
Ineffective. Not ineffectual.
It could be both.
No, I think you better look that up, but I don't think...
I'm thinking it's okay.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work in this instance, but... Go ahead and...
It doesn't work in this instance?
Yeah, go ahead and get into your...
Not in this...
go into your segue.
My segue was just going to be, you know, you wanted to start comparing some of the different eras. And, like, talk about the big-time heels, the big-time faces, the big-time factions. And since I could segue straight into this this Charlotte, North Carolina CM Punk little throwback line, we might as well start with the factions and where it all started from. And that would be the four running down in the Dirty South.
Yeah, so, I mean, we can go all the way back to the 70s, but anything from the 70s really, like...
We're just talking about stuff we heard about.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. So I think for us, I think we started, I mean, I started watching early stuff in 82, 83, but it was kind of like, it's kind of like, you know, I was watching in the bathroom, you know, because you kind of have to hide and kind of watch it because you don't want people to think that you actually enjoyed it. And it was kind of one of those things, it was a guilty pleasure. And like, I remember watching like 82, 83 going like, oh yeah, man, this stuff is so fake. You know, anybody that watches this is really dumb and it's not really smart, you know, if they think that this is actually really happening. But then you get drawn, and you're like, oh, it's kind of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we really started kind of getting into it maybe 87? 87, 88, around that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually kind of around the time of Survivor Series, too. So this is kind of a homage back to when we first started watching. Because we would start, like, because back then, Survivor Series, every match was 5-on-5.
Yeah.
Teams of five tried to stay alive.
Yeah. And, yeah, it was a big deal because you got to see a bunch of team-ups that you generally didn't get to see.
Well, even, I mean, like, even after, like, soccer practice, like, we would have to wait for, like, the kids that were picked up late and stuff. So it was just, like, your dad started waiting in the car and stuff. And there's always, like, two or three guys where their parents were always late. And we're just, like, kind of hanging outside. And you would just go down the roster, and we'd just go like, well, what if this guy teamed with this guy? Or, oh, that would be a good Survivor Series if they had these five guys versus these five guys. So even way back when, call it kind of the whole Hall of Kayfabe, we're like, yeah, this guy should be in the Survivor Series, and he'd pair really well with this guy. So it's just kind of an extension of what we're doing. So what we kind of want to do, or what I kind of thought of today, especially with the Four Horsemen theme song coming up, I kind of wanted to look at, like, okay, so you have, like, 88, 89, 90, around that era, about a three-year window, maybe even to, like, 91, 92, and just kind of look at and compare, like, that era to today's era and how that compares and how kind of who's the better of the faction. So, like, right now, so the biggest faction, I think the two biggest factions back then, well, there's, like, probably about three factions, right? So you had the Four Horsemen, you had the Mega Powers, and you had the Mega Bucks, or, like, Ted DiBiase's stable of the Million Dollar Team or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't even remember the Million Dollar Team, but I mean, you can even go, like, the Bobby, the Heenan family was
really the stable in WWE, but it was a different type of stable, right, in that... It's not like all the guys in the group were all, like, together and backing each other up. It was, the connection was through Heenan, but it wasn't like the Four Horsemen where you'd see them all come down together or, like, you know, what NWO turned out to be. It's like, you know, if he had a tag team that he was managing, they would pretty much operate independently of themselves, and then when he had a singles match with Andre or whatever, then he'd go handle that.
So now, we didn't plan this out, so I think we were kind of going off the cuff of how we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to establish, like, the factions, like, today. You know, what stables are going on today and what we can kind of compare it to. So, obviously, I think the first one is going to be the Shield. The second one is probably going to be the Wyatt family. I think those are kind of the two main factions that are going on right now. Anything that TNA is doing changes from week to week, so it really doesn't matter with that. I mean, maybe you can do the Authority, but... I mean, you might be able to do it, but...
No, I think the Authority is definitely a faction at this point, and the Shield is kind of like a part of that. So you got, like, the Shield, you got Triple H, you got Orton, now you got Kane and that, and then probably from time to time, Shawn Michaels will be somewhat a part of it. I think it's pretty good. I mean, that doesn't really compare much to anything I'd say in the...
So we established it.
Yeah.
So let's just kind of go down the line then. So... Probably the top faction right now, I think, if you think about in terms of the performers, maybe even mic work, I think the top faction right now is going to be the Shield over the Wyatt family, just because you have three guys that are all performing right now. All three guys can kind of talk at the same time, where the Wyatt's just Bray by himself. Mm-hmm. So if we go head to head and we do the Four Horsemen versus the Shield, we can kind of extol the virtues of the Four Horsemen and then talk about what the Shield does and kind of like say, okay, right now, what grade would you give the Shield as compared to the Four Horsemen? Because the Four Horsemen, they're like the benchmark, you know, like they're the very first ones, the first kind of whole, not brotherhood aspect, but all four guys with common interests.
They were all for one and one for all.
Yes! Yeah! I'm getting paid! The whole thing with them was, their whole thing was to keep Flair champion, but at the same time pick up all the other championships too. Mm-hmm. So we can just kind of go with that. I mean, if you ask me to kind of expound the virtues of the Four Horsemen, it's going to be 20 minutes later and I'll still be talking about them. So I'll go ahead and let you kind of get your take on the Four Horsemen and then we can start comparing them to the Shield.
Well, I mean, I think that's a tough comparison, considering by the time the Horsemen got together and were doing their thing, like, there were all these seasoned veterans. They've been everywhere. They've done everything. So they had a clear plan, and they had, you know, they had the total package, if you will. Whereas the Shield, like, well, I think their mic work's pretty good.
You're not following the format. So you got to talk about the Horsemen first. Uh-huh. Like, what made them good?
And then I can jump
in here and there when you're not making a point that I want you to make, or when you make a mistake.
when I say something wrong about your Horsemen.
Slap you.
Yeah.
So, slap you. And
yeah, well, they were great because, you know, they get up there, they could all hold their own on the mic, they could cut good promos, they could carry the entire show just through talking alone, but then at the same time, you know, when you need to put on a good match, any combination of the four guys that you put in there was going to get the job done. And the thing that was nice about them, I think, like you're saying, how they had this quest to get all the gold, they had the titles that were relevant. So all the matches they were in were always a big match. And so I think that it was easy to have them up at the top of the card. And then you had this combination where you got Flair at the top of the card with the world title. You got Arn and Tully with the tag belts, and then you got whoever the fourth guy was at the time, whether it be Ole just being muscle, or Or you could have, like, I was going to say Wyndham, yeah, like, as, like, the television champion, like, some lower down the line.
Well, usually, like, Wyndham would be the U.S. Or U.S. Or Tully would be the U.S.
Right. Or the television, right? Tully, yeah, was television for a while, right?
Arn would be the TV champion, plus, like, the tag team champion, yeah, as well.
So then it's good because you have guys at all levels of the card. So all throughout the show, you can build a whole show around just guys going against the Horsemen, and have it have a logical build to the lower card matches, to the tag matches, to the world. So, I mean, I think everything made sense. I think the experience that they had in the ring on the mic was what really allowed you to build, like, this entire promotion about them and people chasing them and stuff like that. And yeah, they were just really seasoned at the time.
See, one thing, the one person that wasn't seasoned was Arn Anderson, because Anderson really kind of made – he was making a name for himself, but he really took off when he started teaming up with Ole. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Ole really helped him launch his career, and Arn kept Ole, you know, made – the whole deal with Arn doing that, and then Ole, he extended Ole's career maybe about 5 or 6 more years where he was relevant. Mm-hmm. Where Ole by himself probably wouldn't, he probably would have been done maybe, I mean, he would have been done after 2 years by himself. It kind of really extended for another 10, 15 years, just kind of within on TV, just the role that he played on TV as like
partner manager,
and like he would be like the head of talent relations on TV, and mm-hmm, you know, he couldn't do this, he couldn't do that. So you had that. There's a little bit of correlation between the two. The one thing you did bring up, and which I really don't think there's that much, much difference right now between the Four Horsemen in NWA and the Shield right now in the WWE. Because with the Shield, you have three guys. Yeah, they're not seasoned guys, but they wrestle like they're seasoned. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very well groomed for their roles. All three of them. Two of them can talk. You know, I think Rollins and Ambrose can talk pretty good. I mean, Ambrose, I think, is the best talker. But then you have Rollins. I mean, I think Rollins is pretty much untapped. He does. You know, I think he can talk a lot more than he could, but he more than makes up for it in ring presence. And if you really look at the way the Shield's been played off in the WWE universe right now, they've been carrying all the shows. You've been saying it for a long time. These are the guys that have been carrying everything. They're in all the main matches. They'll either have a promo or a walk-in where it sets the stage for anything that goes later on during the show. They did hold three titles at one time. They weren't major titles, right, but they did bring back tag. They extended the tag team belts. I think Kane and Daniel Bryan kind of really establish those belts again with it meant something, but the Shield was able to take it and like just kind of make it more of a kind of like a faction type thing. So
yeah, well, I think in letting the Shield win those belts and then have a good solid run, like I don't know when the last time you had two legitimate teams have good back-to-back title runs, right? You'd have like a lot of transitional champion tag teams, and then maybe you get another team that has a good run later. So I think Kane and Daniel Bryan, they really did set the stage and establish it. But the guys that made it like a consistently good good piece of the show was the Shield, making sure that they didn't just become transitional champions. They made a name for themselves on their own right.
And they built up other teams along, yeah, with that. I mean, they made them a benchmark where all these teams, Usos, Primetime Players,
Rhodes.
Yeah, I mean not so much the Rhodes brothers. I mean, I think when they won it was kind of a fast thing, but it meant when they lost it meant something. Mm-hmm. And it really, even with the storyline the way it was, to get both those guys to get their contracts back, and they're like, well, now you got to win the titles, and so it really kind of made a benchmark for people to reach. So it's not that much big of a difference. I mean, I think for me
the big difference would be that as good as Dean Ambrose, there's two different differences. As good as Dean Ambrose is, just the way that they play the whole United States Championship, it still leaves everything in the mid card. Whereas you don't have like that. You have like the tag team champions, which is a big deal, and then Flair on top to back it up. So like,
and plus the secondary title at the same time,
right? So if you had say Dean Ambrose as like the world champion, or even, I mean, not that there's much difference with the Intercontinental, so it probably wouldn't be that big of a deal. But if he was the world champion at the time when they had the tag belts, that would have been like approaching Horseman territory. The other thing is, while I think that they're good on the mic, and I think Reigns is a lot better than you might be giving him credit for, like in terms of talking.
I'm giving him credit. I'm not saying he's bad on the mic.
You're saying there's two good guys on the mic,
but I did say that Reigns, I think, has a lot more potential than what they're giving him.
Yeah, well, I think, and it looks like they're priming Reigns for something big too. If you kind of watch a couple of things I read and just some of the little interactions he's had with Ambrose a couple times over the last month. So I think they're priming him for something even bigger. But as good as – I think they are good on the mic, but they don't go in and carry a show on the mic the way that the Horsemen did back then, right? You never open the show with a Shield promo and then bring them back later, you know. I think they're capable. It's just not something that they've done yet. But there's no doubt in my mind that their work has been what's carried most of wrestling for the last 2 months.
Yeah. So work rate, I think, if you go between... Because a lot of stuff you're saying about the Horsemen, a lot of it has to do with kind of... I don't want to say perception, but a lot of things you're saying is like... It was a different era, so having those belts, like, I think, meant a lot more than saying the Shield carrying those belts. Shield can't touch the Four Horsemen on the mic. I mean, their worst talker probably... I mean, hell, probably their two worst talkers would be Ole, but Ole was a very good talker. I mean, he would kind of bring everything back in and say, like, we're going to kick your ass. And he actually, like, he didn't say, like, come Sunday, we're going to kick your... You know, he's like, this is the way it's going to be. We're going to kick your ass, and you're going to have to deal with it because we're the Four Horsemen. Barry Windham was a good talker, but when you compare him to Flair and Arn... And then Tully was kind of, he wasn't as good as Arn or Flair, but I mean, he still was pretty good just because everybody hated him. So talking wise, I think the Four Horsemen had the edge. I think for work rate, I think it's neck and neck. I mean, I really think with what the Four Horsemen did in the ring, how they elevated other people, I think the Shield does the exact same thing. And the Horsemen are always able to save face because of their talking. The Shield, they hold it just because, and this is where I'm going to give the edge to the Shield in this area. When they come out of the crowd and they surround that ring, a lot more intimidating. It means a lot more than what the Horsemen ever did. Because the Horsemen, Flair would never go out by himself. You know, he would, and the Four Horsemen would come and the guy would back off. But just in terms of sheer ring presence of, like, intimidation factor, that definitely goes to the Shield.
And I think the other thing, too... And you can tell me I may be wrong on this, but as the heel characters that the Horsemen were, I think there were times where they strategically fled. And I think that's one thing that I think they played the Shield so well in that. And even like NWO was in the beginning, but then, you know, they kind of got cowardly. But you have never once seen the Shield run. Like whether, you know, and specifically Reigns. Like he'll stand up whether he's outnumbered to by Big Show and Kane or... Anybody that comes down there, the Wyatts, like, you know, with this past Raw when the Wyatts came in, and then I liked Seth, like, when, like, it wasn't that they attacked him, but they kind of tried to push him out of the way. He's like, you know, don't ever touch me, and then started getting all mad like that. Like, they refused to back down, like, through anything that they've gone against, whether they were outnumbered or had the numbers in their advantage, and I think that's one of the things that's really stuck, and like, even more so than the titles, you know, because obviously they've dropped these tag belts, but this idea that they don't back down, they don't run ever, and I think that's the thing that's kind of like the enduring quality that the Shield has.
So the Four Horsemen, I think, whenever you talk about a faction, they're going to be an A, no matter what. That's the A group, right? I would put Shield, if I had to grade them, I'd put them A minus B plus. I mean, not that much far. I mean, okay, talking, you give it to the Horsemen. Okay, ring work, I think it's a wash. I think it's a wash there. Titles, Horsemen. Ring presence or intimidation factor definitely goes to the Shield. So I think the Horsemen beat them out just by a slight margin. So I'd probably give the Shield like a B+ if you're going to compare them back to the Four Horsemen.
Well, and the other thing too, I mean, the Horsemen had like a full, I don't even know, like at least 10, 15 year run.
More like a 20 year run.
Yeah, whereas the Shield, they're still in their infancy. You know, I don't think they're ever going to be another faction that goes as long as what the Horsemen did. But it's been about a year since the Shield's been around. And there's, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find any group that has had that good of a first year in the last 20 years.
They're definitely a group where if they do break up, you're always going to want them to come back. The same thing with the Horsemen. The Horsemen break up, And you're kind of saying, like, man, it's time for the Horsemen to come back. I think you're going to say the same thing about the Shield. Like, just those three guys together, they have really good chemistry together. So, yeah, so I'd give that probably, you know, I stick by my B+, A- for the Shield as compared to the Horsemen. Now, you did bring up the NWO. So let's go to the end, and that's like the 90s. That's kind of like the mid-90s when they're really going strong. Early 90s, mid-90s, 96, 97. So comparing them to the Shield.
Well, I don't think you have a Shield without the NWO. And I'm not trying to say that the Shield's a straight NWO ripoff, but I think there was facets of what they did. And I think they actually, part of the reason why it stays so strong is because they learned from the mistake that NWO made, is that they expanded way too big and brought in a bunch of people. Whereas at first I thought it was good when they had a bunch of guys. Like the NWO Elite, as they call it, when they had like 7, 8, 9 guys and they were all like, you know, main event to guys that they had just passed their prime. Like that was a real force to be reckoned with. But then they started bringing in all these jokers out of nowhere. There was kind of rumblings like, oh, maybe they'll bring in Ryback or do this and that. And they never messed with the Shield. And I think that's one of the best things that could have happened with these guys. You know, again, as good as the Shield is on the mic, I'm still going to have to give the edge to NWO, mostly on the strength of Hogan and Hall. Like, Nash could get it done, and Nash was good at kind of being that exclamation point in it, kind of the way.
Nash was kind of like the Roman Reigns of the group.
Right, or as you're talking about the Horseman, maybe more like he had like the Oli role.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, he didn't have to say a whole lot, but like he was just going to like back everybody up and put the exclamation
point. And that's what's kind of funny when we talk about the NWO. There's so many, I wouldn't say reincarnations, but there's so many different types of the NWO. There's so many, you know, sometimes it was Hall and Nash, sometimes it was Nash by himself, and then you throw in the Macho Man in there. So, I mean, there's so many different kind of elements. If we're just kind of looking at how we compared it with the Four Horsemen, mic work, yeah, you give that to the NWO. Presence in terms of them carrying the show. I mean, they carried that company for a good 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. and they really found a way to screw it up. but in terms of show presence, you give that to the NWO. But ring work, you give that to the Shield by all means. You give that to the Shield. And in terms of intimidation factor, I would probably still. NWO had the intimidation factor just because there were so many of them.
Sheer numbers.
Yeah, but you're right. But when you start bringing in guys that really don't. They're just there to be there, because all of them want to make a buck off of this and try to extend their careers.
The thing was so hot that everybody wanted to get a part of it, and so, you know, you can understand that. And some of the expansion I liked how they had this, because that was still back in the 90s. You still had this little bit of interchange with Japan from time to time. How they formed like this NWO Japan, and that was the perfect guys to bring in Chono and Muda to lead that, because these were established guys in the United States, and they could go over and they were over big as heels in Japan, and then they could start that little faction as well. And then you have a guy like Scott Norton, who I think is a really underrated guy, just a good muscle guy in a group, and you know, he had a big presence in Japan as well.
And Buff Bagwell really shined in that group. I mean, Buff Bagwell was one of the guys that you would watch just because he would go all crazy. He was like the kind of the, not a loose cannon, but like he was entertaining. He was funny, and he could all the stuff that he was doing, just kind of like the straight, like just kind of goofing around.
Yeah,
well, you could back it up because he had all these guys backing him.
Yeah,
up.
And even to a greater part, Six at the mm-hmm. time, right? Where like you know, the kid always was great in the ring, but and then he was funny too. But when he's out there talking junk as this little like. 5'11", 160 pounder, right? You know, there's not much backing. But when you got him with Hogan, Hall, and Nash behind him, and he can go talk his crazy stuff and get all nuts. I mean, it was. I thought that worked
yeah.
perfectly too.
I mean, it was a lot of it was based off of personality and mic work. So you definitely give that to the NWO, and you can even, you know, and I don't want to compare Four Horsemen and NWO. That's something that's a really sticking point with a lot of fans, and you'll always kind of. The uneducated fans will always like, well, yeah, NWO all the way. And I'm sitting there going like, well, it's been done before. And I don't want to get into that argument. So mic work, yeah, you give that to the NWO. Personalities, you know, you definitely give that to the NWO. Carrying a show, you give that to the NWO. Ring work, that goes to the Shield. I think intimidation factor, I still think the Shield kind of wins out just by what they do.
I think that it just depends on that. That one really depends on which iteration of the NWO you're talking about. When you're talking about like that original three, when they did their early expansion, when they just started bringing Macho and Six and some of these other guys, I think their intimidation was good because they were about seven deep, all legitimate guys, and they still didn't have that thing where like they turned to Hogan like backing down and being a coward, right? He still played strong in the early part of the NWO. So that early NWO run, I think their intimidation was probably better than the Shield, just in the fact that that there were so many of them, and they'd always come out at like the worst time. But yeah, once they got to the part where they brought in like Crush and yeah. and Virgil and a Million Dollar Man and all these guys, then it just kind of became a.
You're just mad that you bought that autographed. Picture of Virgil
when I saw him in the subway.
Yeah, with the blurry, he's all blurry in the background. He has his name signed on, and Hulk Hogan's in the front. No, but even if you go with like the first three, and then you know, then you have Six in there, you know, so that's kind of like the first four. So if you go to the first three, mic work, yeah, if we do that, I think you can get the NWO with that first three or even first four or five. I think you can give them. An A as well, just with what they did, because we're not comparing them to the Horsemen. So you give them an A all around as a faction, and stacking up the Shield, stacking up against them, still an A minus B plus. So I think WWE has really done its job with the Shield, and it's really working. So
we've done two kind of throwback teams in the NWO and the Horsemen, and then we've done one current. So let's go with another current one, and let's see how you. I want to see how you rate the Wyatts.
Okay.
I know that's kind of like your pet team right now.
So let's go with.
Is there any team from the past that you could compare the Wyatts to?
Well, you know, you have the Wyatt family and you have the Bobby the Brain family, but I don't think there's enough comparisons. I think the one group that we are missing is going to be DX. I think you have to talk about DX when you kind of talk about factions.
But would you make a comparison between the Wyatts and DX?
I think you can make a comparison to the first DX, which is Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and China. That was like the first DX. So you have three there, and then you have these three guys too. You can do a lot of correlations with that. Because I don't think it's fair to compare the Wyatt family to Six Pac. Triple H and the New Age Outlaws. I mean, that was a good faction. I mean, the only guy that couldn't talk on that in that faction was
Billy Gunn.
I mean, you had
but
a great
he could work.
He could work, yeah. I mean, he's probably you could probably argue that at that time he was probably the best worker out of all of them. I mean, Triple H was a good worker, but Triple H. I mean, it's kind of funny because you know Triple H always kind of threaded the line of like being the worker of the group or being the guy with the title. But then he would try to be funny and try to do this, and they kind of had the whole, like, let's get ready to suck it, and, you know, and they tried doing this, that, and this, and it never really worked, I think,
didn't work for Triple H.
Yeah.
It worked for the Road Dogg.
The Road Dogg, if you look at that group, the Road Dogg really made that group. He was the one that kind of held everything together to me.
So
I think we can make the comparison that those four guys versus the Wyatt family, and I think the reason why... is because, okay, so you have Bray Wyatt. And Bray Wyatt, I mean, he's playing the shtick, you know, just like Triple H played the shtick of DX. Like, in terms of believing their shtick, I think Bray Wyatt, by and far, you know, sells it a lot better than Triple H could ever do. Mm-hmm. So I think you kind of give the edge to Bray Wyatt. In terms of entertainment value, like on the mic or in the ring, if you're going to go with the Road Dogg as the guy that you're kind of the benchmark of that is, well, you look at Harper, and Harper over the past like 2-3 weeks with this yeah. I mean, it's getting close, dude. I'm like,
I'm not ready to put him in the Road Dogs category.
Yeah, but you know what I'm kind of getting at.
His work's really good in the ring, and I think that's the thing is like you see guy with that kind of size and that kind of like power set, like he's pretty damn athletic for as big as he is, and he's getting like a persona in the ring. And I think that's what makes Harper really interesting.
Persona is the perfect. That's the perfect thing. That's the perfect thing I think you can compare it to. So you take like Road Dogg's persona in the ring, and a lot of people forget. Everybody remembers Road Dogg's mic work and his entrance. And it's like that by and far put him in one of the best classes in terms of, say, like a yes man or a front man for the group. I mean, you can't really beat what he did. Great on the mic. But there was a time, there's maybe a 2 minute window where he had some signature moves. He had like kind of his little shake knee drop that he did. He had the punches. He had his finisher, which was the pump handle slam. But like there'd be a couple times where like he'd put the guy in the pump handle and then he'd start like he'd start gyrating his hips into him and stuff and everything like that. Just little things like that. So there was a time before he got all messed up on pills or whatever he was on where he was actually he got the crowd going with the stuff that he did in the ring, just like Harper does now. You know, Harper with his yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, I actually like...
His gator roll,
but more is like, yeah, yeah. I just like, I watch the match because I just want to hear him say it.
Yeah, and the crowd's starting to respond to it too, yeah, which is nice.
And it's working. So, DX, I think if you give them a grade, they're not there with the Horsemen. They're kind of the poor man's NWO, and it's kind of like since WWE won that war, I think a lot of people give DX a lot more credit than what's given to them. Now, they did have some monumental moments where they invaded WCW, yeah, and stuff, and that was good.
Yeah.
My favorite DX one was when they were walking around downtown New York, and they just gave the mic to Road Dogg. And they're just like starting to walk into businesses and stuff, and like it's like some like Irish pub or something like that, right? And Road Dogg walks in, and this is when Braveheart was really big. Not in mind that they're like they're in an Irish pub, and Braveheart's about Scotland. And but he just come, he walked in, opened the door, and he'd be like, "Freedom!" So I mean, there were some really good moments during that time.
What about when Triple H donned the rock eyebrow and afro?
I didn't like that. I mean that to me that was kind of
sticky.
That was kind of forced. I mean, it worked. It was funny, but whenever you try to beat The Rock at his own game, it's not going to work. And The Rock pretty much made short work of that segment. They tried doing it a couple times, and it was more storyline because, you know, they wanted to have Rock lose to DX or whatever it was as a corporate champion and everything. So it was more based in terms of storyline, in terms of just straight persona. It really, you know, it was everything. It was a lot more scripted, mm-hmm. And that's more probably because of, well, you can compare the two. WWE was very scripted. WCW was not.
Right.
So in terms of giving that group a rating, I'd probably say maybe a B or a B plus. Maybe if we're feeling generous, it's a B plus.
It's funny, Triple H talking about Daniel Bryan as a B plus player.
Yeah.
And I would agree. I think I was not a big DX fan, but I think the strength of their stuff was good. They'd definitely be B plus, but I wouldn't go overboard. You know, I don't think, like I said, I mean, I guess technically they won the war, but it wasn't because of anything that DX did or specifically anything that Triple H did. They just outlasted a company that made a bunch of bad decisions.
That and then, but everybody during that time, during the Attitude Era for WWE, every character was hitting all their cylinders. You had Undertaker in his prime, Kane facing the Undertaker, that really worked. Edge and Christian, a lot of people forget about those two guys, but they were hot for a long time too. And then, of course, then you bring in the ladder matches that they did. So everybody in the company, they're all
Dudley's, Hardy's, yeah,
they're all holding their own. So I think DX would give them maybe a B plus. The Wyatt family hasn't been around a lot. We haven't even talked about Rowan. I think Rowan's persona is a really good persona. I mean, when he comes out with that flipping lamb mask and like the lights come on, you know, it gets all dark. The light comes on. The whole walk that they do, the whole we're here, and then he sits, you know, Wyatt sits down in the rocking chair, the lights come on, and you don't know if those two guys are going to be next to Bray Wyatt or whether they're going to be in the ring. Like, take, for example, the past Raw where the lights go out, and then they're standing in the ring like that. I mean, that was just good drama right there. You know, it really, really worked. Rowan's definitely the weakest out of the two. Bray's been hurt, so you really had, we've only seen glimpses of him.
So you want to grade him incomplete?
I would definitely, I mean, persona for DX and for the Wyatt family, I think that's a wash. I think both of them definitely have two totally different personas, but, you know, it's there.
It's their persona that's carrying them through the show more than their actual ring work. Not that the ring work's bad.
Yeah.
But that's
the other thing I want to bring up, too. So you talk about ring work. Well, me and you have never been a fan. I think we gained respect for Triple H. I think when you look at Triple H's body of work, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, you know, this guy, his body of work has been very good. But it's definitely not. It's not one of those things where you look at it and go like, man, he's an A. You know, like yeah. it's more like a B. You know, I mean, and in the respect level of what he's endured throughout the whole time, like his run, I think you give his run like an A, just because of what he was able to do. But ring work by itself, he's a B. He's nothing great. And the thing is who has more entertaining matches? I mean, who had more entertaining matches? You know, if you compare it to Triple H, you know, if you go Triple H, he's the front man. Bray's the front man of the group. Bray's only been in a couple matches. He had a really bad match with Kane. I really didn't like that match. But then the day after that, he has another match with someone else, and it's a good match. And whenever he's been in, Bray's good in the ring, dude. So the jury's still out because we haven't seen his big body of work. We saw a lot of stuff with him as Husky Harris. I liked his ring work as Husky Harris.
Yeah.
He carried NXT for a long time, and that whole thing carried NXT, and that's really what vaunted him to that spot. Mm-hmm. So, and then tag team-wise, they remind me a lot of Demolition. Rowan and Harper remind me a lot of Demolition. Like, not technical, they don't tell a lot of stories, but they're it's a very brutal match.
Smash Mouth.
Yeah, and you respect that type of match from them. And that's the match you're going to get, and they do that very well. So ring work, we can sit here and go like, you know, Triple H is, but I'm not going to do that. And I think ring work, I would give a slight edge to DX just because they've done it longer. But what match would I rather watch? Would I rather watch a DX match with those four guys, or would I rather watch the Wyatt family? I think I would lean more towards wanting to watch the Wyatt family. I would lean more towards watching Harper. I would definitely want to watch Harper more than I would want to watch Triple H. Like, I would rather watch a Harper match than I would a Triple H match. So that's kind of the funny thing about it, is that, you know, here we are taking, like, one of the vaunted factions of all time in DX, where they're, like, they're on hallowed ground, but...
Well, and I'd say this to kind of give DX a little bit of credit, if you want to talk ring work. I mean, the two best workers they had were Billy Gunn and X-Pac, if we're not talking about the Shawn Michaels part of the deal.
Yeah. And if you throw in Shawn Michaels, I mean,
it's a game changer, right? And then, you know, I want to give credit where it's due. X-Pac was a great worker, as was Billy Gunn, and, you know.
Okay, but so let's do that. So would you rather watch Billy Gunn in a singles match? Would you rather watch X-Pac in a singles match, or would you rather watch Harper in a singles match?
That's good. I would rather... That's pretty neck and neck with Harper and X-Pac in his prime. X-Pac could put on a good match. Billy Gunn would put on a good match, but
Billy
Gunn
had
no,
all
yeah, he had, yeah. No pre, he had no presence. You're talking about presence. He had none. So it's pretty close to say between Harper and X-Pac. I guess it would depend on who they're going against and everything like that. But I'd say those guys are neck and neck.
So they're... See, now, me personally, I mean, it's no question for me. I would rather watch a Harper match than I would an X-Pac match. Yeah, X-Pac was a good worker, but he's a good worker in the sense that Chris Jericho is a good worker. You know, I mean, I would much rather, now if I ask you the same question, Jericho or Harper, I'm saying Jericho all the way.
Right.
You know, but for X-Pac, I know what his match is. You know, he there's not a lot of believability with his matches.
Mm-hmm.
I would much rather watch a Harper match over X-Pac. I would much rather watch a Harper match over Billy Gunn. So those are your two best workers in that group right now. Mm-hmm. Now, Bray Wyatt, would you rather watch a Bray Wyatt match or would you rather watch a Triple H match?
I'd rather watch Bray, but it's more at this point I want to see how good he's going to be.
Yeah.
I know exactly all the spots that are going to happen in a Triple H match. I'm not interested in watching any Triple H's matches at this point.
But the things that you've seen from Bray Wyatt, he has an unpredictability about him. And you know, he can do, his spots are going to be something that I think is more based on his talent level of what he is, whereas Triple H is very, very methodical. Like, and it's kind of like Triple H matches haven't changed over this whole time. And that's why, you know, we don't want to see a Triple H versus Big Show match. I don't want to see a Triple H versus Daniel Bryan match. I don't want to see a Triple H versus Brock Lesnar match. I don't want to see a Triple H versus Shawn Michaels. I don't want to see a Triple H versus Undertaker match. I don't want to see any of those matches. Now, you put Bray Wyatt's name with all those guys, I would much rather want to see Bray Wyatt.
Sure, definitely. Yeah.
So I mean, so it's kind of a funny thing. It's like I respect DX a lot, but same thing. It's like I like their stick, but their ring work, I don't know, dude. I mean,
yeah.
I just don't think it's there. I think it's, and I don't think a lot of it has to do with, because we haven't seen a lot of Bray Wyatt. I mean, it's just, I'm just kind of thinking, like, if it's going to, like, say Triple H is going to face Big Show in the main event somewhere, right? I don't want to see that match at all. There's no way I want to see that match. Right. If it's Bray Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan, hell yeah, I want to see that match. Not because it's Daniel Bryan. It's just because I know a better story is going to be told with Bray Wyatt as compared, like, Triple H versus Daniel Bryan. Which one would you rather see, Triple H versus Daniel Bryan or Triple H versus Bray Wyatt? Triple H versus CM Punk or Bray Wyatt versus CM Punk?
Anything that doesn't involve Triple H.
There we go. So I'm going to say right now, I'm going to say that if you're going to compare DX to the Wyatt family, I'm giving DX a B. I'm giving the Wyatt family a B+. Because if you start talking about personas, right? So you have Road Dogg doing all this stuff. And that's the only thing that's keeping it close. But you can't tell me that Road Dogg stuff is better than what the Wyatt family is doing right now with all their stuff. I mean, it's just the second that lamb head pops up, you know, it's like you start watching. You know, same thing with Road Dogg. You know, it's like you're going to watch it. But the only thing with the Road Dogg is that it's going to be the same thing over and over and over again. With the Wyatt family, it can change up a little bit. So I'm going to give like a B+ to the Wyatt family. I'm going to give a B to DX.
I'd probably just on body of work, I'd probably go B plus to DX and more like B minus to the Wyatts with the potential.
But you talk about body of work. But the thing is, if you really look at it, though, I mean, what body of work are you talking about? Because if you go by like who would you rather see at this time, I mean, you don't want to see anything with Triple H. You don't want to see, I mean, so I think what you're saying is that, you know, X-Pac is kind of, he's a guy that kind of changes it up for you.
I'm just saying that
right or wrong, that's what you see.
Well, I'm just saying what they did in their time was good. I don't think it was great. I think it always overshadowed by what the NWO was doing. So they were never better than the second best faction at the time
so
that they were in.
So is the Wyatt family right now the second best faction? I mean, it's two totally different. See, here's the thing. So you have like NWO, right? And then you have DX, same type of faction. DX is always going to be the redheaded stepchild of that type of faction group. Well, you have the Shield, totally different faction from the Wyatt family, and it's kind of alluded to, you know, with this whole thing, and it really pumped up that England crowd. I mean, they were going flipping out over this thing. Yeah. I don't think you can say that the Wyatt family is a poor man's Shield. You know, and I think...
I'm not saying that at all.
What I'm getting from what you're saying, I mean, you know, with all the points that you're bringing up, I think it's more of a respect level for you while you're putting the DX ahead of the Wyatt family.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Wyatt family's been there for 5 minutes. Like, they're good. And I think that as time goes on...
But we're not talking about longevity, though. I mean, because if we're going to talk about longevity or whatever it is, you could say the Shield's been there for 10 minutes as compared to, say, the Four Horsemen in the NWO. And you unbiasedly gave a grade based on that, but
no, I'm just talking about what I would say about the Shield.
Okay, DX at their hottest, right? Okay, DX at their hottest. The Wyatt family right now is at their hottest.
I don't think the Wyatt family is at their hottest. I mean, I think that you got these two guys that were relatively green. One of them's come on really strong over the last few weeks. The other guy is still a straight power guy, but I haven't seen a whole lot of. And I think the best worker out of the three has been in two matches. So if I had seen like 3 months of Bray Wyatt work with all these guys, I might have a different tune. But like I have no doubt that they're gonna get to the point that I think you're talking about and even be an A-list type team.
Yeah.
But just right now I just can't say based on what they've actually done.
Okay, so DX, you're giving, what grade are you giving them?
I'll give them a B.
Okay, and then we'll give, what are you giving the Wyatt family?
I'll give them a B. B minus, maybe.
Okay, so
but
just.
They're right in.
A slight edge to DX. Okay,
right.
I can get with that.
Yeah, I got it. I have to give the edge to DX because, like, if right now the Wyatt family, if the Wyatt family were split tomorrow, then there would not be much legacy that they have left. But DX, even though I don't think it was the greatest thing since sliced bread that everyone at the time try to tell you that it was, they still carved out a legacy that is going to last. So I'll give it to DX, but I would anticipate within 6 months to a year that I'll definitely be saying that the Shield has done, that the Wyatts have done enough to surpass what DX did. That's how I'll put it.
Okay.
But out of respect for the guys, because I do respect all the guys that were in DX, I still, on body of work, I gotta put them ahead.
Okay. So let's do this then. So late 80s champion, Hulk Hogan. Champion now, or the main guy, main draw, Hulk Hogan. Main draw in WWE right now is John Cena. How would you, where would you put those two guys?
I mean,
so Hulk Hogan, Hulk Hogan's the name, right?
Right.
And so we're giving him that. So with it, and I want you to try to be as unbiased as you can towards this. So better talker, Hulk Hogan.
Oh, but on,
Hulk Hogan. Yeah. I mean, come on, we're doing this. So,
okay.
So
I thought that was a question. Sorry,
yeah. So Hulk Hogan by far better talker. Way more charisma, right? So he beats John Cena. All right, I think with this one we can grade individually. So Hulk Hogan, charisma, talker, late 80s, A+.
Through the mid 90s.
Yeah.
A+ all the way. Through the early 2000s, he could still get it done talking.
But we're talking about, yeah, so yeah, we can do Hulk Hogan for the, we can do Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan, anything pre-TNA is A+ for Hogan on the mic.
Yeah. John Cena is like, what, a D?
I give him a C. Maybe C minus.
Man, you're being... That's the bell curve, right? That's the teacher.
Just to me, it's like, when you're talking about Ds and Fs, you're talking about dudes like Ryback and Goldberg that are just completely incoherent on the mic. John Cena can get on the mic and make a point.
I'm not disagreeing.
Right.
With you.
I mean, he can make a point. He can at least like have some like add to some kind of build towards a match. But like his punchlines are corny as hell.
His rapping's weak.
His rapping's yeah.
His rapping is much to be desired.
At least yeah. Like our truth is killing him. Our truth is killing him the last couple of days.
Shabba shabba leba. What's up? Where's JBL? What's up?
So
Hulk Hogan destroys him. So you'll give him a C. I'll give him a C minus. And you said C minus too. Ring work.
I give Hogan a C minus. There's a curve on Hulk Hogan because most of Hulk Hogan's career predates the really athletic wrestler, like the combination of having an athletic big man. So at the time, through most of the 80s. Just being big and strong was enough to be believable in pro wrestling, and Hogan had that going. If Hogan tried to come through today with his moveset, like he wouldn't get anywhere. So I'm gonna give Hogan a, I'm not going any lower than C- on Hogan's ring work,
yeah,
just because
C plus.
Yeah. Okay. C. Yeah. Just like for the time he was passable for the time in terms of what kind of work people actually did.
And then when you combine that with his charisma, I'm not saying that the charisma is going to up his grade, but even though he was a C, his charisma more than made up for it.
Right. Yeah. John Cena ring work. I'll probably give him a B.
B. Yeah.
It's like, and I'm trying to give this guy as much credit as I can. I've the last 2 weeks of just random matches he's been in, I thought it's been probably the best work I've seen out of him in the last, I don't know,
10 years.
Five.
Yeah.
Like, aside from, like, giving matches here and there when he went against CM Punk or things like that where he was against a guy that could really bring it out of him. Like the other day, like, the SmackDown match against Ryback. You know, I really could care less about a Ryback-John Cena match, but at least John Cena, like, he at least kept me engaged because he's doing some different stuff that I haven't seen him do. Had a nice powerbomb on Raw against one of the guys in his handicap match, and like, well, he's doing stuff.
Yeah, I'm just laughing at the whole handicap match thing because it wasn't a handicap match.
Yeah,
because he can take on the whole roster and still come up on top.
Just to me, I thought it was funny because all anybody wanted to see was Cesaro go off, right? Like,
and
the
whole
crowd. They
never gave to him. Yeah.
No, they wouldn't let him do the fucking the Cesaro swing. That was the only thing that crowd probably wanted that whole night, was to see Cesaro do a swing.
Yeah.
And then right when you thought he was going to do it, he got some stupid ass reverse into an SDF. But anyway, yeah, I mean, like if Cena, I think if Cena, if you were to switch the two, right, into their eras, I think if Cena came along in the 80s, he would have probably been bigger than Hogan, just because he's a lot more athletic than Hogan ever was. And as bad as the other people were on the mic at the time, the average guy on the mic in the 80s, John Cena would have been passable on the mic in that time, I think, compared to guys in the WWE. I think there was better talkers in WCW overall.
I get what you're saying, but I don't agree with it. I think Hogan's, if you're switching eras, Hogan's physique, I mean, if you're switching eras, I think Hogan with his size, he wouldn't be as big of a star as he was, but I don't think Cena would be as big of a star either because he didn't have the physique at that time. He wasn't an overpowering physique. That you cannot beat Hulk Hogan's Golden God physique in the late 80s. There's nothing that compares to that physique.
All right,
sure. And just the way that kids reacted to him, the way that me and you, I mean, we were talking about his arms, dude, you know, and we weren't, you
still,
know.
Still talking about his arms.
Yeah.
24-inch pythons, brother.
Yeah, so I mean, I disagree with that. I don't think Cena is a bigger star than Hogan. I don't think anybody is a bigger star than Hogan. If Hogan's still there at that time, there's nobody that's a bigger star because you had great wrestlers back then. I mean, Macho Man was a way better wrestler, had a good physique on him too, way better on the mic, but you couldn't touch Hogan with a 10-inch pole in terms of what he actually did. So I don't agree with that whole statement. Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying, and I think it has merit to it, mm-hmm. but I just think it's a bad argument.
All right. Well, okay. Well, I just think, like, his stuff could have translated better to what was going on in the 80s than what Hogan could translate to now.
Definitely.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Because the athleticism that Cena has. And then I was just saying.
And he had the physique to back it up, too.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And the guy was. He still got power. I mean, like, he guys tossed a giant, like, Big Show several times, so. For all I know, hell, maybe he could have slammed Andre. Like,
if Andre would have let him,
right?
Yeah,
that would have been a really interesting. Like for Andre to allow Hogan to kind of like take that mantle, and no one could make Andre. Andre had to do that out of his own will.
Yeah,
would Cena have been able to garner that kind of respect from a guy like Andre to go ahead and let him pass the torch? That's a great question. But to kind of keep it on the topic, I think ring work. Yeah, B for John Cena. Overall persona, I think Hogan blows him out of the water again. I don't think there's much to John Cena except for smiling for the camera.
Well, back then it was all about physique. It was all about stature, and then, I mean, there was wow factor too. I mean, when you first saw the first time you ever saw Hulk Hogan, I mean, you're just sitting there, you're just in awe of this guy. You're like, man, this guy, he has, I mean, you want to talk about total package. I mean, Lex Luger got the total package because of Hogan. Lex Luger's career is because of Hogan. I mean, it's like they try to do the same thing with him. It never really worked.
The Lex Express?
Yeah, because there's only one Hulk Hogan. And unfortunately, there's only one John Cena. So to compare the two guys, I definitely give the edge to Hulk Hogan. But, you know, to give credit where, you know, Hogan as the face of the company, all the merchandise that Hogan sold, all the stuff that he was like the first crossover star. He was selling his own milk, dude. He had his milk line called the Hulkster, and that was his milk and stuff. So, I mean, he had all this stuff going on, the cartoons, you know, Hulk Hogan being the main guy in a cartoon. So all of this stuff going on, you compare it to today, which is a lot more corporate, not just with WWE, but worldwide, it's all about corporate. He's done very well as a face of the company. I mean, I would give Hogan in that respect at that time. I'd give him like an A+. I would give Cena probably about an A with the stuff that he's supposed to do. And then of course, then he started bringing all his charity work. He really pushed the Susan G. Komen Foundation. I mean, he spearheaded that whole thing. It's a good cause. It's believable that he really cares about that foundation work, and then also, you know, the Make-A-Wish at the same time. I mean, Hogan was doing Make-A-Wish. Cena, you know, has really gone off and has really established himself as doing that. Being the face of the company, marketability, you give that to Hogan, but Cena's not that far off. I mean, I'd give an A to Hogan. I'd give an A- to John Cena.
I don't see anybody asking John Cena to be in any Rocky movies. So
well, there's no Rocky movies now.
Hey man, I'm just saying, man. I'm just saying. No, I think that, and we kind of there's something we kind of bring up from week to week on.
No holds barred. We've seen No Holds.
Right.
We went to the movie theater to see No Holds Barred.
Right.
Me and you didn't go to the Marine to watch 55 Marine.
Right.
55 Gas Attendants.
Right.
Back.
And this is what I'm saying. Like Hogan actually had legitimate moves into Hollywood. I'm not saying any of the movies he was in was great. Okay, but at least he had a movie that the premiere wasn't at home on your DVD player.
Yeah.
And what I'd say and we talk about like organic and whatnot from time to time here. Like Hogan created the spot that John Cena has. Like it was kind of like this whole thing. Like if you want to compare to basketball, it's like okay, when we watched NBA growing up, right? Like Magic Johnson, he made his position in the league. Larry Bird made his position in the league. Barkley and Jordan made their positions in the league. Once Jordan started getting to the point where you saw that, like, you know, it was going to be about time, then they didn't let any star make himself in the league. They're like, okay, we got to find the next Jordan. And essentially that's what WWE has been trying to do ever since Ultimate Warrior, to be honest. It's like once they realize, okay, well, Hogan may be getting old. We need to make somebody that's going to be the face. Let it be the Warrior, right? And Ultimate Warrior is basically the WWE's version of Harold Minor, right?
Yeah.
And then, well, that didn't work. Let's give it to this guy.
Anthony Hardaway.
Yeah, Grant Hill, right?
Yeah.
Whoever was supposed to be. And
Grant Hill is the perfect thing because John Cena is the Grant Hill of the NBA.
He basically is the Grant Hill of the NBA.
Yeah.
Or of the WWE. And now it's like, so yeah, he's got this spot, but it's the spot that basically someone's looking to fill the Hulk Hogan slot, and he's the right guy at the right time. He got lucky in that The Rock became he's lucky that The Rock was good enough.
The Rock left. He's lucky that Stone Cold got hurt.
Well, he's lucky that The Rock was good enough as an actor to go and make a profession out of that. Whereas, you know, I have no doubt in my mind if John Cena had the chops to branch off and be a Hollywood star, he would have done that, which is why I find it kind of disingenuous when he's always trying to run down The Rock for leaving the WWE. Right? John Cena's made enough attempts at trying to have a movie career that, you know damn well, if he could, he would. So I think John Cena's kind of, because he's been placed to this spot, and because he doesn't really have the talent to do anything else in branching off, as hard as they push him to be this crossover star, he doesn't have the talent or personality.
So let's do this then. So Flair is the Magic Johnson, Larry Bird of the NBA, and which is a really good correlation that you brought up. Hulk Hogan is the Jordan, right? And John Cena is LeBron James. Like, as good as LeBron James is, he will never be compared. I mean, he will never be as good as Jordan.
I can't even give John.
He's a Kobe Bryant of the NBA.
That he's the media creation. Yeah.
So he's a Kobe Bryant thing.
Yeah,
because Kobe Bryant is a media creation.
Yeah, yes, that's what I would say.
And he's gotten all these titles, but he had a lot of help from Shaq, which you always point out that he won the first three titles or whatever it was, with Shaq being the main guy.
So Kobe
won these titles when the NBA was at a very low point in terms of talent, and now I mean Kobe's old now, but John Cena is the Kobe Bryant of them and of the NBA.
So who's The Rock? Shaq?
The Rock is The Rock, you can, I think The Rock is more a combination of Shaq, Karl Malone, Charles Barkley, like all the guys that were like really, really good, like Hakeem Olajuwon. You know, like he was like the combination of stuff, because
The Dream's skill set with Shaq's ability to talk.
Yeah, yeah, because the whole thing is that The Rock, because we can't compare John Cena to The Rock. We can't compare John Cena to Stone Cold, because The Rock, and you will never have a situation where you have The Rock and Stone Cold at the same time. Both guys were so good in so many different ways that they really kind of, those are the two guys that really won the war. It was those two guys. That's what really made the Attitude Era, was those two guys. And you can't have one without the other.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, we talk about this from time to time also, but the fact that there is no competition for the WWE at this point is why it's going to continue to be John Cena.
The Rock is Shaq, and Stone Cold is Kobe Bryant, when both of those two guys are together. Now, everybody gravitated towards Kobe Bryant because they're like, oh, this guy, he's such a great player and stuff like that. But you needed a guy like Shaq to be the personality and be the presence and be like kind of the, I wouldn't say muscle, but The Rock really was doing, to me, The Rock did all the work.
He was the foundation.
Yeah, and Stone Cold was, you know, Stone Cold had his good run, but it's more of a case of like, so me and you like Shaq out of the whole Shaq and Kobe Bryant duo. Well, almost everybody else likes Kobe Bryant way better with the Shaq and Kobe duo, and that's what Stone Cold was. Like, I have respect for Kobe Bryant during that time with Shaq, but I always liked Shaq a whole lot better. But everybody else, but not, maybe 80% of the people like Kobe Bryant a whole lot better than they like Shaq. You know, and gave a lot more credit to Kobe Bryant than Shaq at that time.
Well, I think it's a revisionist historian thing, right? It's like, it's easy now to go back and talk about, like, all these things that Kobe did, right? But if you're watching it in the moment and you're realistic about, like, where he was when he first came into the league and what his role was on those first three titles... Like, if you're realistic and you're watching it in the moment, then you know what happened. Okay, but now that you're like 15 years into a career and everyone just wants to talk about like how many titles he has and what scoring records he has and this and that, it's easy to gloss over what actually happened at the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it is. Like, you get to this point with John Cena and he's like, oh, he's got, you know, he's held this title 15 times and he's done all this and this. It's like, yeah, well look how he got his spot. He only got his spot because The Rock moved on to Hollywood. And then Brock Lesnar decided he wanted to fight, play in the NFL and then go into MMA. They didn't have anybody. They hadn't built anybody else. And he just got thrown into this position. And if you really go back and look, like, what's his, like, and, you know, what's his whole moveset was basically a big Rock ripoff, right? His whole, the You Can't See Me is, like, the most obvious, like, ripoff of the People's Elbow. And a pathetic one at that. But it was sad. It's like, well, let's give you all the things that The Rock did that was really good. Let's give those to you now, John Cena, and then we'll just push you hard because we don't have anybody else we're trying to push. And then along the way, you know, you had a couple like pretty good feuds that you let him have with Randy Orton, with Edge, and things like that. But there wasn't really, you know, he was just given. And then a lot like Kobe again, he was just given the spot that they needed to fill at the time, and they didn't feel like they could give it to Randy, and I don't think they wanted to give it to Edge. And Jericho, he was never, you know, he didn't have the look, right?
Yeah. Okay. So Hulk Hogan A plus, John Cena B.
Just overall, we're talking now.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this one is probably going to be my favorite one, but you always have the secondary guy. Who's the better worker and is kind of like the fans' favorite wrestler. So, Macho Man and CM Punk. So, let's start with ring work. I think ring work, I would probably give that a wash. I would maybe give a slight edge to CM Punk because I think CM Punk can wrestle anybody, where Macho Man was a lot more scripted in what he did. But you always wanted to see the Macho Man match, and you definitely always wanted to see the CM Punk match.
I think CM Punk definitely has more ways to beat a guy, right? He's got, you know, he can go off the top ropes if he needs to. Like, he's got the good springboard clothesline and stuff. I wouldn't classify him as a high flyer, but he has the ability to get up there. Like, strikes are really good. He's got the really good kicks, but then he's got that Anaconda Vice, and I think that's where the difference comes in. And like you're saying, that he can go against anybody, because even if there's a guy that he couldn't lift to throw the GTS on, you know, he can always get some kind of reverse. Like, he's a good mat technician, and he can get a reverse in there and get the Anaconda Vice.
One thing I want to bring up with Macho Man, because you talk about CM Punk, and I think I'm the bigger fan of CM Punk. And I might be the bigger fan of Macho Man, too. I don't know. I think me and you, in terms of Macho Man, we kind of like him the same. Macho Man fought Andre the Giant one time during his championship run when he was champion. I'm going like, dude, I'm like, what type of match is this going to be? Because Macho Man's too small. Macho Man had a great match. I mean, he had a great match with Andre. Andre had a great match with him. A lot of elbows from Macho Man and stuff. I mean,
on axe handles off the top.
Yeah, rope. And Andre would cinch him in the bear hug for a long time and stuff, because that's all Andre could do at that time. But it was a really exciting match, and I think something happened. Oh, what happened was Jake came in with a snake, and of course, we all know that Andre was afraid, was deathly, deathly afraid of snakes. And the Macho Man went over to Jake's like, no, come on, brother, I don't want to win that way. Don't bring the snake. I want to beat him straight up and all that stuff. And so he kind of left. But it kind of ended in a squash, you know, something like that. But he did have good matches with guys that you couldn't think that he couldn't beat. CM Punk, when he goes in, doesn't matter who he faces, you think he can beat anybody. Undertaker, Brock Lesnar, you know, across the board. So ring work, if we want to give, I can't give anything less for ring work with Randy Savage. He's an A all the way. But do we want to give CM Punk an A+ in terms of ring work? Because I can't give Macho Man an A- in ring work.
I think Punk can get an A+ in ring work. I mean,
okay. So
who's a better overall worker than CM Punk?
Yeah. So ring work, he gets there, right? On the mic. And that one's kind of tough. I mean, you know.
See, that's one of those things that
different eras.
Yeah, exactly. Like I don't Macho's stick wouldn't work right now. But in the 80s, there wasn't really anything better going than that. And that's not a slight to Macho Man. But yeah, he had that voice. He had that crazy personality. He'd get pissed at Elizabeth.
Yeah.
He'd get all defensive.
You're out of line.
Yeah.
My number's on the back of my license plate.
My number's on the back of the license plate. Elizabeth, down that aisle.
So back then, there was a lot of promo work with, like, Mean Gene, right?
Right.
A lot of promo work, and he was the best going off of Mean Gene and stuff. His promo work, tape promos were really good. I thought he really shined. I mean, everybody forgets when the Mega Powers exploded. The promos that he did leading up to that was just classic, you know? Take a look at the edited footage, yeah! Look at the hand run on her ass, yeah!
He said, I love Elizabeth, brother. I love Elizabeth like a sister.
Hogan, say you love Elizabeth like a sister? Love me like a brother? So, his mic work was good. CM Punk's mic work, different time, good promo cutter. He doesn't always hit a home run out of the park, but he does it consistently. Where when he's on the mic, you listen to him, he cuts a good promo. What makes him better is when he starts ad libbing. He had the shoot, you know, the work shoot promo, fat guy in the front row, you know. So he has kind of a for what the era calls of him, he is the best at doing it. So, but I would probably make that a wash in terms of promos. I mean, you can probably, if you look at, like, you know, the time of Macho Man's promos, I think he was the best. You look at the time of CM Punk and the promos that you have to cut now, I think CM Punk is the best. So, I kind of want to give a slight edge to CM Punk because I think he has more talent. But in terms of what the situation called for, I'd probably give them a wash.
I'm going to give the edge to Punk. And it's basically because they both had essentially the same obstacle to overcome. Macho Man was always in the shadow of Hulk Hogan, and Punk is always in the shadow of John Cena. But throughout that, CM Punk has had a lot more runs than Macho ever did and sustained it, and actually had a run that you could legitimately say places him ahead of John Cena, which Randy Savage has, except for the one World Heavyweight Champion, the WWE Championship. Like, it was always some short run that didn't get anywhere. Like, in WCW,
yeah.
I think he had the belt, like, maybe two, maybe three times.
Maybe five times in the span of 5 months that only lasted one day.
Right, and that's all it was, right? And there's nothing sustained with Macho Man in terms of getting that world title and making a run and carving himself out. Like, his thing was always, his whole story was always, like, how he got fucked by Hulk Hogan. Whereas CM Punk has beaten John Cena. He's beaten everybody that there is to beat, and he's gone and kind of made his name on his own, not as just the guy that keeps getting screwed by Hogan. So I think that for whatever reason, I think CM Punk's been able to kind of carve out his own individual legacy independent of anybody else. Whereas, like, as great as Macho Man is and was, like, there's always, you have to say, but Hogan held him back so much. But, like, he's like the Red Rooster promo. Yeah, Macho Man's like one of the greatest ever, but he couldn't get over Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, you're right. But he never beat me. Macho Man's run as champion was a very, very good run. And there's a lot of similarities between CM Punk's championship run and the Macho Man's run. Macho Man was just starting to become a face. Then he had a great face run. And then he had turned heel like the last 3 months. Same thing with kind of CM Punk. So the longevity isn't there. But when Macho Man was, when he was champion as a face, very hot.
Yeah.
Very hot champion. I mean, just really good. Macho Man an A. I can't give Macho Man an A minus. He is an A. So as like the wrestling fan's favorite wrestler, the guy that gets it done, the guy that's the backbone of the show, Macho Man's an A. CM Punk an A plus.
All right.
And I think we just kind of wrapped up as much as we do this compare and contrast. So go ahead.
What if you're just gonna compare like a straight worker?
Well, we're like a minute. We're an hour 16 in.
We're running up against it.
Yeah.
All right, we can do that next week.
Okay. Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we can even make maybe we can start another running segment. You know, Haku's already kind of done it. We still have to get a Hall of Kayfabe and maybe a match real fast. So.
Well, let me do my match first.
Okay.
Because I got that queued up. So it's not one specific match, but like, and it's funny because one of the two participants is your guy. I like him, but he's not. I can't say he's my guy. And the other guy is a guy we both respect and like, but was never one of our top guys. But for me, I think probably the best series of matches that I can remember, just work for work, was Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit. It's like...
But see, I've never seen those matches.
Dude, those matches were fantastic. So, it's like...
Like, I remember one where they did the shoot wrestling, you know, for like the whole match.
Yes, but that was like just one match. They had a series, it's like... I can't ever remember having seen the same two guys wrestle week in and week out, and every time I just didn't care. I didn't even care if it was the same match I saw last week. And
not even Booker T versus Chris Benoit?
No. I mean, those matches were great, but the stuff with Angle was great because both of these guys were just straight technicians. They had like all sorts of suplexes, like had been built to the point where they could take a bunch of damage and still kick out of stuff, but not so high that they couldn't lose to a pinfall either time. And I think the chemistry between those two guys was tremendous. So, like just if they ever have like, I don't know if they ever
never will
put any kind of, well, yeah, I guess they won't. But like if, you know, you ever just to see like a bunch of matches between two guys that could just like put in work. And just had every single thing, combination of power, speed, athleticism, technical ability, ability to tell a story in a ring, could get up on the top rope and do some high spots if they needed to. Like, those were just some great matches.
Yeah.
Like, better than Kurt Hennig and Bret Hart by a long shot.
And I think those matches, like, you want to talk about those series of matches, it always reminds me of the three fights that Ali and Frazier had. Like, none of them, they were never the same after those three matches. And I think with all of the concussions that happened, all of the kind of angles really banged up, yeah. I think that took a toll out of both of those
guys. Yeah, I mean, both those guys work really stiff, especially, you know, as far as Americans are concerned. Both had the triple rolling German, which was, that was like my favorite move at the time. And both of them pulled, like, you know, Angle took it from him, but like just as good. Those matches were some of the best stuff I ever saw. And so, like, I know we've been talking about different matches and some, like, you know, high-profile ones. There's no one – I don't think this was super high-profile. There's not one match that sticks out between the ones that they had. But I probably saw 10 to 20 of them between the two guys. And it was don't turn the channel, you know, don't walk away. That was, as The Miz would say, that was must-see.
Do not bring in The Miz when you're talking about these two people.
It was must-see.
Bring in The Miz's dad instead. You know, those matches were so good that it would make The Miz's dad, like, stand up and cheer instead of just looking at him going, like, is my son getting his ass kicked right now?
What's funny is I'm going through, you know, building my game because I got this WWE 2K14. And you go through the community creations. I'm just looking to see some of the guys that people have made and whatnot.
what's his finish move? The stand there and don't do nothing?
I don't know, but they made his face like really long, like face length as big as possible.
Nice. So that's like one of those matches. It's like, as a wrestling fan, it's like I compare it to, like, say, like, we're drunk and we start talking about wrestling and we're like, oh, what about this match? What about that match? And it's like, yeah, what about Angle and Benoit? You're like, oh, yeah, of course. And I've never seen those matches, but I would say to you, I'm like, oh, yeah. I mean, it's, all you got to do is say those two names. And,
yeah.
And you know, I started getting a lot of respect for when Kurt went to TNA and he started doing all the stuff with Samoa Joe,
with the Japanese dude, Yuji Nagata. That really cemented it for me right there. But I mean, all you got to say is Chris Benoit. And then you throw Kurt Angle, too. I know exactly what type of match that's going to be. And I'd watch that. I could watch that any day of the flip.
Yeah, no, they were great. I mean, and you know, Kurt had great matches with The Rock, and you know, Jericho's. You know, I'm a much bigger fan of Jericho than either of those guys. And you know, Jericho can work with anybody, but there's just something about the two of them that it just it was magic when those two got together. And yeah, I just wanted to bring that up as a great series of matches for anybody who wants to take a look
at. You're bringing a lot to the table tonight. Yeah. You know, that's good.
What can I say?
Okay, so Hall of Kayfabe. Let's try to do this. See if we can get this done pretty fast.
You got anybody? I got two guys that I got in mind, but you can if you. I don't have.
You know, if I kind of connect the dots here and there, you know, yeah, I got a guy, and I kind of want to see what your take is on this guy. Because his career was cut very short, and he had at the time, we're kind of comparing back and forth between times. This guy, I think, had a look for his time that was pretty good. I mean, it was up there. But
I'm wondering if you're thinking about one of the two guys that I was thinking.
I'm talking about modern day warrior Kerry Von Erich.
No.
You're not gonna put that guy in?
No, actually, it's funny because. On the drive over, and I was thinking about the podcast last week that when I brought up like guys that I never understood, that was one guy that I him and Luger were the two guys I felt we left off the list.
So you're putting veto power on this one, right?
I think
I'm talking about Kerry with the work that he did in Texas because
I've never seen any of that.
See, I saw a little bit of that, and I was like, man, this guy has something, and then it kind of curtailed. But he had a lot of drug problems. He got injured. He had to wear a special boot because his foot was too high or whatever. So, I mean, and of course he dies and stuff. But in his, I mean, for him, he stopped himself from having a great career. But if you want to give me, hey, I vetoed two guys that you've done. So if you want to veto, go ahead and veto.
All right. I'll since you got me going in that direction, saying like a guy who had a great physique for his time. I think he did. He even kind of predated.
So you are vetoing.
I'm vetoing okay. Von Erich. I can't get with Von Erich.
Okay.
But I'm going to put this guy because I think he's kind of one of the all-time tough guys. But he had the look, and really early on the first couple of WrestleManias, he was like big-time player at the time. And I want to put in Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. I think for my money, still probably the best pile driver that there ever was. Don't know of any incidents that he hurt anybody, but that guy got some elevation on a pile driver. The dude was pretty ripped. Like, he wasn't big like Hogan.
Great look.
Wasn't big like Hogan, but was just cut, and, like, you could put him in the ring with Hogan, and it was believable that he could kick this man's ass. Backstage was definitely a tough guy. Almost killed Leon White one time, Van Vader, a previous inductee. And, you know, I just think Orndorff, if he had just maybe come around 10 years later, I think that guy, he's probably, you know, we talked before about guys, maybe some of the best guys that never held the world championship, and I think we kind of left him out because I think he should be on the short list. I think if he had gotten the push and they made him the world champion, I think he could have like really transcended wrestling and been a big name today.
Yeah, that's a perfect induction. His biggest mistake was becoming friends with Hogan. And as we all know, anytime you become a friend with Hogan, you're going to turn heel. And then he never took off his heel. When wrestling 82-83, you had all these cast of characters. Of course, like, you know, it's because it's funny. It's always funny, like, because Hogan showed up in WWF, I think, like, in 84 or whatever, or 85. But I always think of him, like, in 82-83 for some reason. I know my timing's off. It's just one of those things where you're like, so maybe it's like 84. It might have been 84-85. But I still think it's like 83. Might be like between 82 and 83, but you had this whole list of characters, like, you know, Junkyard Dog, British Bulldogs, all these guys. But then the one guy where you're like, yeah, man, yeah, that guy. Because, like, with us, it was like, well, let's play, not me and you, but, like, with some of my other friends or with, like, my cousins and stuff. Like, well, let's play wrestling, right? They're like, well, who are you going to be? Well, nobody would be Hulk Hogan because, you know, nobody wanted to be that guy. They're like, oh, well, you know, you can be the Junkyard Dog. I'm like, well, what's Junkyard Dog doing? He's like, oh, well, he does, I don't want to be Junkyard. Yeah, I'm like, I don't want to be Junkyard Dog. And I'm like, well, who does a pile driver? Like, oh, that's Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff. Yeah. And it's always like, he's always like this backstage guy, or he's always like this guy. He's kind of like Steamboat, you know, Steamboat in WWF. He's kind of like Tito Santana, like guys that just, well,
I think he's most comparable to Steamboat, just because, like, Steamboat, like, Steamboat was always a good pick to play as a guy. Like, oh, you can be Rick the Dragon Steamboat. Like, oh, that's a great name. Well, what does he do? Like, he does a lot of chops. He does a lot of martial art moves, which was considered martial arts back then. Like, oh, hell yeah. Well, Orndorff was the other thing, too, because Orndorff had power.
Yeah.
He wasn't the biggest guy.
But he's athletic as hell.
Athletic, and he could pull off the power moves. I mean, that pile driver, I mean, the pile driver to this day, I think, is, not to this day, but for us, the pile driver is the move. You know, like, the pile driver was the move for a long time. It got replaced by the power bomb. And when Nash whipped out that power bomb, you knew wrestling changed forever. Mm-hmm. But that pile driver is like, who could do a pile driver? It was always Paul Orndorff. And he had a good look, great physique. He got hurt. Where his whole side atrophied, and his arm was like hella small and right. stuff, anything like that. So, I think that guy, during that time of the early '80s, mid '80s, that guy you could have put any belt on that guy. I don't think that guy ever had a belt. I think he had a WCW tag team belt, but he never had a singles belt. And he could have been an Intercontinental Champion. He could have been
a world champion.
Hell yeah. But I think you know, you place the Intercontinental Champion on him first, yeah. and then he can go ahead and become the world champion. It's just the territories were different back then. It was still kind of, you know, you didn't have the contracts. I think if it was an age where the contracts were there and they were guaranteed contracts, I think by all means, like in the early 80s, if they had guaranteed contracts, he would be a world champion. It was just the timing wasn't right for him to do it. I think that's a great induction. And that's old school, baby.
Old school, baby. Yeah.
So we're getting to an hour and a half mark. Went by fast, man. This is a lot better than bagging on Raw, saying like, well, hey, like, even the people in England don't like John Cena, dude. You know, they're booing him like crazy, you know. So we didn't even get to talk about how much of a prick that – and, yeah, I did use the word prick. How much the prick Tyson Kidd comes off, not only in Raw – but on that Divas show,
too. Did you watch it, or you just saw the highlights?
I just saw the highlights. I was like, man, like, and my whole thing is like, is this real? I mean, is he trying to play a role?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just like, I'm like, why? And it's like, you're trying to make this guy a face. I'm like, what the hell? You know, it's just like, it just doesn't work for me on that part. So that's a whole different story. But I like what we did today. Move skill 51. Better have my donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. And, if there's anything else you want to say real fast or close it out, let's do it.
I was kind of disappointed that I didn't get to see the debut of Bad News Barrett.
I'm hoping for SmackDown or main event.
They're still in England, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, and I was thinking Manchester was going to be the perfect spot to debut it. So let's hope maybe we do have something current to talk about next week, and hopefully, like, he comes back and makes an impact. I think there's a lot of directions they could go with him. And, you know, if they run him as a face, that could be pretty good.
The next story you got to tell for the next music skill is his music that he has.
Yeah, whenever I get to talk about the video games, it's going to be like the tease of my man talking about Japanese wrestlers.
Man, that's old school. yeah, so.
I'll get into that when we do the whole thing.
All right. Better have my donuts over here. Give him a follow on Twitter. I'm Bad News Ramen. I think I am.
You are?
I hope so, yeah. Bad News Ramen. Hey, 403 people say I am, so I guess I am, right?
How many people say you're Aura Man 14?
why you bring that up, man? You gotta bring that up, yeah. Was Andre really your dad? Why you gotta bring that up? So, Musical 51, better have my donuts, Bad News Ramen, and as always, it's good to go running.